Hey, good afternoon, Juno. It's just a few seconds before 3 o'clock, and you're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore, your host today for Juneau Afternoon. I have a great lineup of guests. Some remarkable women are going to be featured on today's show. Katie Bosler is coming in, but she's going to be talking about two artists who are going to be appearing at the Rec Center out at the UAS campus, and also the Pacific Peoples Translocal Identities and Cultural Connections is the Honors Symposium, and Miriam Kahn is coming up from the University of Washington to talk at that event coming up on UAS. We're going to talk to Elaine Schroeder, who is one of Aware's Women of Distinction and the recent winner of the YWCA Women of Achievement Award. So we'll be doing that. And then the fireside lecture this weekend is on Mary Joyce, an extraordinary Alaskan woman. And so we'll be talking to the folks who are going to be doing that presentation. And then near the end of the show, we'll be talking about an upcoming LGBTQIA+ town hall meeting, which is coming up on March 1st at 3 p.m. So all of that's coming up today on Juneau Afternoon. Stay tuned. Time now for National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A Native American leader has announced a challenge to the Washington State congressional seat currently held by a Republican. Steve Jackson reports.
Joe Pakotis is currently the CEO for the Colville Federal Tribal Corporation and former tribal chairman. He's announced his intention to run as a Democrat in the race against Republican Congresswoman Kathy McMorris Rogers. Pakotis feels he has a good chance to unseat McMorris Rogers, who's held the 5th Congressional District seat in Congress since 2005. He says he believes events in the last year have strengthened the resolve of voters that change is necessary.
And I think the chances for taking back the seat to the Democrats is great this year because of the government shutdown, because of the debt ceiling issues that they're contemplating, and because of the lack of compassion for the 5th Congressional District. You know, the number of people on food stamps and the number of people unemployed and the number of people that are below the poverty level.
Pakotis says he feels his Native American ancestry is an advantage in the race and that he has a better understanding of the plight of those who are disadvantaged. He says in his various roles with the tribe, including tribal chairman, he made numerous trips to Washington, D.C. in lobbying efforts with Congress, working on issues that included negotiating a settlement for the tribe on Grand Coulee Dam, land settlements, education funding, and the Violence Against Women Act. For National Native News, I'm Steve Jackson reporting from Spokane.
Homeless people who gather at a day shelter for meals in Anchorage, Alaska, are incorporating Native traditions, in part as a form of medicine. KSKA's Daisha Eaton has more.
When Samuel Johns steps into the industrial-sized building filled with cafeteria tables, heads turn. Some of the homeless people ask about his jacket, others about his drum. He says something cool happened when he started drumming and singing at Beans.
It amazed me about the amount of respect that I got and the quietness that happened.
Quietness followed by request after request for traditional Native songs from every corner of Alaska. Ed Pratt, who says he's Tlingit from Hoona and Juneau, asked Johns to play a song to honor a friend who recently died.
I love the drumming because it takes me away from myself.
Vernita Ballett, who's Inupiaq from Selawik, likes the drumming too.
It reminds me a lot from the way long ago people, Inupiaq people. I love it. Made me feel young again.
Our Native dancing and drumming long ago was kind of our form of going to church.
That's Ed Tilana, a cultural programs coordinator at the Alaska Native Heritage Center.
Before Western civilization came to Alaska and religion came to Alaska, this was our way of making prayer. When we hear our drumming and our singing, that fills an empty spot in our heart.
A spot John says he's excited to help fill.
Our drum is like medicine. Our drum is a tool for healing. It's something that's been passed down from generation to generation for a reason.
John's only knows songs from his region. He hopes Alaska Native people from other regions will join him to drum, sing, and dance with the people at Beans Cafe soon. In Anchorage, I'm Daisha Eaton.
Yali, hey, yeah, Yali.
February 1828, the first issue of the Cherokee Phoenix was published. It was printed in English and Cherokee. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, and by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. National Native News is made possible with support from Guesthouse Anchorage Inn. Wake up with the sun. On the web at guesthousealaska.com. Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
6 minutes after 3 o'clock, you're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore, your host today for Juneau Afternoon. My first guest is madly typing away on her Apple computer, trying desperately to find her notes, but we're going to make her do it a cappella here.
No, hey, Pat, how's it going?
No, no, it's pretty good. Katie Bosler's with me, and there's a bunch of wonderful things coming up on the UAS campus.
Yeah.
You got a heck of a concert coming up. When is that thing?
It is Tuesday.
Tuesday, yeah.
March 4th at 7 p.m. at the UAS Rec Center.
Yeah.
And pretty exciting. We have a couple of top-notch singer-songwriters from Nashville coming to town. They're on a kind of Northwest tour and have some family-related connections, I guess you could say, in Juneau. So Sarah Beth Goh and Jessica Campbell will be performing at the Rec Center on Tuesday night, and there'll be pizza from Juneau Pizza, free pizza.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's an event that's going to be great for the public and students alike. And if you haven't been out to the Rec Center, it's a really great venue for sound and visuals as well. It's very comfortable. They've got kind of comfortable chairs you can settle into there, kind of like being in your living room, and just a great sound system. So it should be a really good show. And then Liz Snyder, who is extremely talented, local singer-songwriter, who is best known these days as Half the Wool Pullers, and she's going to have a busy weekend because she's playing tonight opening for George Kuhar and his band.
Mm-hmm. They're doing an album or a CD release.
Yeah, at the Rockwell, 9 mm-hmm. o'clock. She and Alex Cut Lars, and then they also play tomorrow night at the Rendezvous, but on her own, she's going to be opening for these women. So it should be a great night of women's music.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They sound fabulous. We tried desperately to get some samples, but you're going to have to just go to the concert. That's what you're going to have to do to listen to these folks. But
right.
As they say on the TV ads for Knives, you get more.
Yes, yes. There's just always more, isn't there?
Yeah.
Well, I do want to give people a heads up that we are going to be doing our, I think it's now, second annual Spring Honors Symposium. You know, we have an honors program now at UAS, Pat. And this year's forum focuses on experiences of Filipino and Pacific Islander communities in the Pacific, in the U.S., and, of course, Alaska, Southeast Alaska. And comes about due to that Asians constitute the fastest-growing immigrant population in North America. That's surpassing the rates of Hispanic immigration for the first time since 2009. So our honors program has just decided to, address this. And since we're on the forefront of this shift, they want to kind of explore what are the experiences, what does it mean to each of us as individuals and socially and from our own ethnic and cultural backgrounds to build a truly inclusive and multicultural community. So this is the academic and ethical agenda of the symposium. It's been put together by Robin Walls, our professor out at UAS, as well as Saul Neely. And it's kind of exciting having an honors program at UAS. So we're inviting the public to come to some events. And if you go to the U.S. website, go to click onto the Juneau tab, and then go to activities, you can find out all about it. But on Wednesday night, the 5th of March at 7 o'clock at the Rec Center, Ralph Pena, who is the playwright who wrote Flipzoids, is going to be reading mm-hmm. some, which was performed here a few years ago with Floridolino Lagandino. He'll be doing a presentation and reading some of that script. And then on Friday night, I think you have it in front of you there, because unfortunately I don't have it in front of me.
I do, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, maybe.
So what's happening on Friday night is very interesting. Miriam Kahn is a professor of anthropology at the University of Washington.
Mm-hmm.
And Miriam has written a really excellent book, albeit a little bit short. It's only about 300 pages, but it's a look at the Tahiti behind the tourism.
Yes.
And it's but she balances it extremely well.
Mm-hmm.
It turns out that she was capable of writing not only something about Tahitian anthropology, but she could also do anthropology of the tourist.
Mm-hmm.
And so her views are scattered throughout the book, contrasting the lifestyles of the Tahitians who are serving in the cafes and everything like that with the people who come to Tahiti for the dream vacation.
Yeah.
And what's really interesting is at the tail end of the book, she makes some comments about Alaskan tourism, which I found really interesting because she's talking about the fact that we have, 3,000 visitors a day during most of the summer around here in great big cruise ships or more.
Mm-hmm.
We can have as many as, almost half the population of Juneau.
Sure.
And so we wind up being extremely comparable to the situation that goes on in Tahiti. We don't have the underclass that Tahiti has serving the tourists, but nonetheless, a great deal of our culture in the summertime is surrounding that phenomenon of tourism. So she touches on that very briefly. Maybe when she's up here, we can convince her that her next book should be something about the anthropology of tourism in Juneau,
Alaska.
Well,
maybe you can do that next Friday, because she is going to be on Juneau Afternoon week from today to give some details about this. But her presentation, if you want to mark your calendars, folks, is 7 o'clock a week from tonight at the Egan Lecture Hall on the UAS campus.
Well, I'm anxious to meet her and talk with her. I think I'll be doing that show. So,
Okay, yeah. So it's all free to the public. Mm-hmm. So we just want to let people know about our Spring Honors Symposium.
The Honors Program, the guys were on the show here a couple of weeks ago talking about the Honors Program.
Great.
This is a really exciting development in the history of a university when an Honors Program gets started and takes off, because it's a home for students who are who want to go beyond the base, and they're providing wonderful opportunities for exploration. So I'm excited about that program out at UAS.
Right, definitely, and it also I think is just kind of giving UAS an outlet for those students, because we're finding the caliber of student is definitely becoming higher and higher as the years go by. People realizing that what a great value the university is, and that we have top-notch faculty. You can get a rigorous education at the University of Alaska Southeast.
And not only that, it's one of the unique things about our educational system, the educational opportunities at UAS. There are students in our marine sciences program up there who graduate having already published at the at the bachelor's level.
Right, and environmental science as well.
And most of them are going on to master's degrees and doctorates, but they're going to go into a situation where publication is a measure of the power and the ability of a professor. They're going to already have done that with one of the professors out at the University of Alaska Southeast when they were undergraduates. So these opportunities for working extremely closely with a faculty member are unique to the bachelor's programs at UAS, and really provide us with a great set of opportunities for people here. I'm really glad to see a freshman dorm coming on the campus, which is going to increase the university-ness.
And this will give us a chance to remind people that the application period is open for that.
Ah.
And it's just a gorgeous facility. And it's going to have spaces for students to study together, and you'll be right there on campus, right next to the library, right near the bus stop and dining services, and gorgeous views of Auk Lake and the mountains beyond. And boy, I was just cross country skiing on Auk Lake on my lunch hour today, and what a gorgeous place.
Oh, you're brave. It's been warming up to 30 plus in the afternoon.
So. Actually, our environmental science faculty told me you could drive a snow machine across that right now.
Oh, okay,
And also they've done some auger work, and there's 2 feet of ice, so I think we're good.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Well, but anyway.
You're sitting here, so I guess it worked out this morning.
It worked out, yes. But anyway, just to remind people, so Tuesday night, the 4th of March, we have the singer-songwriters from Nashville, Jessica Campbell and Sarah Beth Goh, 7 o'clock at the Rec Center. And there's going to be pizza, and Liz Snyder will be opening. It should be a fantastic performance.
Yep.
And then Wednesday night, 7 o'clock, also at the Rec Center. Sorry.
Not at the Rec Center.
Wednesday night is also at the Rec Center, and that's at 7 o'clock as well.
Okay. And then, but the talk, the honors symposium is actually in the university in the theater up in.
That's the Egan Lecture Hall will be the Friday night presentation,
yes.
But it's the Rec Center is on Wednesday
night. Yeah.
The 5th of March, and that's the talk by Ralph Pena, who wrote Flipsoids.
Right. Okay. Hey, keep us posted. There's so much going on out at the university. It's always exciting to find out what our opportunities are.
Okay, thank you so much, Pat.
Right.
Really appreciate it.
You bet.
This is Bird Note. In the rosy glow of a sunrise on a southwestern marsh, a pair of sandhill cranes calls in unison. With a graceful leap, wings outstretched, the two cranes welcome the last days of February. The stately cranes are courting, renewing an annual dance they perform in earnest as the days lengthen into spring. The dance begins with a downward bow, the cranes' long, slender bills nearly touching the ground. Then, like enormous marionettes pulled deftly upward, the cranes leap several feet off the ground, wings outstretched. Bowing and leaping, raising and lowering their wings, the cranes dance on as the sun rises. Sandhill crane pairs remain together for life, and their spirited dance plays an essential role in reaffirming this bond. The cranes' exquisite dance complements beautifully their rich, rolling calls, one of nature's most memorable anthems. The elegant sandhills will leap and dance a few days more before migrating north to nest. You can see a video of sandhill cranes in their courtship dance on our website, birdnote.org. I'm Mary McCann.
It's 18 minutes after 3 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore, your host today for Juneau Afternoon. My next guest is a woman of distinction indeed. Elaine Schroeder is here. And Elaine has won 2 awards just very recently.
Yeah.
You are the first non-Anchorage woman to be selected as one of the Women of Achievement by the YWCA up in Anchorage.
And what a thrill that was. Yes.
Wow.
And what's great is they come so close together, so closely together, I only have to worry about my wardrobe one time. I realized I was spending
come
all
on,
my
now,
energy.
You're not wearing the same dress.
And in Anchorage, I didn't have to say a word. And so I got to worry about what I was going to wear. And now I worry about what I'm going to say. And I have my clothing, you know, is really not important.
You're going to wear jeans and a
t-shirt. Yeah, right.
Yo, folks, here I am. So, and this latest one now is the, there are, 10 women that are, how many are selected?
Four.
There are four women mm-hmm. who are the Women of Distinction.
Right.
This is an annual award put together by the Aware Shelter, and you started a similar situation.
I didn't start a battered women's shelter. Back when I was in graduate school at the University of Washington, we started the Feminist Caucus, and then several of us from the School of Social Work became engaged in starting Rape Relief, which was the second rape crisis center. So then when I came up here, the former director, Karen Robinson, heard I was coming and called me. I remember calling me in Seattle and saying, I've got a job for you, because I came up because my husband got a job with Fish and Game, so we moved from Seattle, and it was to work on developing their rape crisis program.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because they had already the shelter for victims of domestic violence. That was going strong. And then we also started a free women's clinic, a radio clinic for disadvantaged women and all women, reproductive health clinic.
How long has AWARE been in existence?
AWARE has been around since 1977.
Okay. And this stands for?
Aiding Women in Abuse and Rape Emergencies.
Okay. And the center does the Women of Distinction Award each year. You've been doing this now for a while.
This is our 18th year.
Yeah. And the list is amazing. I've interviewed a few of them on the show here. And it's you're joining a real group of incredible women.
You know, I'd love to sit down and have dinner with
Wouldn't
them
that
all.
Be something?
18
yeah.
times 4.
Yeah.
But what an incredible
and
dinner
I'd
party
like to
that
be,
would
I'd
be.
Like to be the fly on the wall.
Yeah. I'd love it.
Yeah, that would be amazing. To, to sit around in that environment and talk to all those people. Just thinking of all of the wonderful ways in which these particular people have changed our society and for the better.
Yeah, they're so all, it seems ways. To be change agents. That's what I'd say they have in common.
Well, you've been a change agent most of your life.
You
took to the streets at a young age, didn't you?
To the streets, so to speak, yes. Right, even as an undergrad, the Vietnam War was just getting going. And I'd just come out of Peace Corps. I was going into Peace Corps, but it was our last 2 years in college. I was married to Bob Schroeder, still my husband today, almost 50 years later, and we got a draft counseling service going because Bob had registered as a conscientious objector, and then we started joining with others at University of Illinois, including some mutual friends. A friend that I have here was Sarah Lynn, which is amazing, small world, and started working on educating people about the reality of the Vietnam War and protesting.
It's difficult, I think, for some young people now to understand how that worked, because for all of us at the time, there was an inevitability to it that we didn't know how to step out of. And it was the people who did the kinds of things that you did.
Well, looking back historically,
awakened us to the fact that it was not inevitable.
Oh, yeah. I mean, historically, and, you know, we repeated the same thing with the invasion, particularly the invasion and occupation of Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, history repeats itself. I think historically we'll look back on that with a similar perspective of the loss and futility.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you, and Afghanistan is going to be an interesting piece of history to look back in 20 years and see what we think about it then.
Yeah,
because our thoughts about Vietnam are totally different than they were at the time
when
we were going through it.
Well, we realize, you know, the Gulf of Tonkin incident was a fabrication. As were the weapons of mass destruction to get into Iraq.
Yeah, the downside of that, of course, was the way we treated the vets coming back from Vietnam. That was not America's shining moment. But, you know, it's the war that was the problem, not the
war was the problem. No. Also, it's a bit of an urban legend. I don't know if you know that, but a lot of research has been done on the urban legend that Vietnam vets coming back were spat upon. Mm-hmm. And it's about to be really not happen.
Right.
Yeah. And a lot of vets marched. There was a whole underground refusenik group that if they didn't refuse to serve, there were underground veterans newspapers, especially in the Seattle area. It was very interesting. So after deployment, many of the vets marched. And now in June, we have Veterans for Peace, and most of the people who are part of Veterans for Peace were part of the war in Vietnam.
Were served there. Well, Sarah Lynn, who are the other three?
The other three honorees are Noreen Otness, Patty Owen, and Carol Pitts.
Now, I think two of those interviews have happened in the third.
Three of them, actually.
Three have happened.
Yeah,
so
and
this
Elaine.
Is,
no, I'm
the last.
Fourth
last. You're the last
today.
One. Well, last but certainly not least. So, what's your next adventure? Now that you have all of these laurels to rest on, you're not going to rest.
I'm really excited about my next event, which is I want to go and find the ice cave on Mendenhall Lake. So I'm dying to go see it. Have you heard about it?
I have.
Yeah,
indeed.
There's an ice cave, and you can climb up to it.
Mm-hmm.
So that I just am so excited about going to the Ice Cave, and I know that's a non sequitur because I don't think there are any more awards around, but it would be rewarding to see that Ice Cave.
Yeah.
Well, there are a lot of people going.
Yeah.
It's a big deal.
Because of the cores of the lake out at the university saying that the ice is 2 feet thick. My prior guest was Katie Bosler, and she was saying that she'd gone out and cross-country skied across the lake by the university today.
Yeah.
Because it's been going down to 18, 19 degrees at night.
Yeah.
And,
it's delightful.
The forecast is saying that that's what's going to be all week long is 15 to 18 overnights, which means the ice pack is good, and then warming up to these lovely temperatures we're getting in the afternoon, the 40s floating around out there. So now the geology of the Glacier Lake is a little bit different than the university's lake. There are soft spots out there and like that. So the people who run the visitor's center at the university constantly warn people about skating on the lake out there. So,
well,
but the ice caves are accessible without having to walk on very much of the lake. I think you're right near the edge for a little bit.
No, you walk right across. Just walk right
across. That's one way.
Stay away from the big waterfall.
Yeah. No. Anyway. So
good. And that was a shift of topic there.
It was an answer I had not expected, but I admire your continuing to be an adventurer and taking challenges like that.
So, I feel so lucky to live here.
So last question, can you give me enough of what you're going to say at your when the microphone is yours without giving it all away?
Okay. I'm going to talk about happiness, and I'm a psychotherapist in private practice, and really one of in part, what I do is help people be happy. And so I'm going to be talking about happiness, but I'm going to talk about what is true lasting happiness, and that is getting involved in helping people or getting involved in something bigger than yourself. And so I've given away the punchline, but that's what I'm going to talk about.
And a wonderful topic that is. That's I have so many people who come to the other side of the table here that I get to talk to on the radio who have extended themselves out beyond the day-to-day
and truly,
have reached into other people's lives.
Yeah, truly to care about something bigger than yourself reduces that it's all about me focus.
Mm-hmm.
And when it's not all about me, it removes a heavy load, and you're much happier. Yeah.
Well said. Well said. Elaine Schroeder, woman of distinction, woman of achievement, great person. Thank you so much for all of the things that you've done for Juno, and will continue to
thank
do for
you.
Juno in the future.
Thank you.
Marilyn, thank you so much. Sarah Lynn, thank you so much for bringing her down and for telling us a little bit about the Ware Shelter.
Pleasure.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday, the 28th of February, 2014. It's the birthday of Michel de Montaigne, born in Bordeaux, France, 1533, the essayist who said the highest of wisdom is continual cheerfulness. Such a state, like the region above the moon, is always clear and serene. It's the birthday of the novelist Colin McCann, born in Dublin, 1965, his book Let the Great World Spin came out in 2009. Grew up in suburban Dublin, middle class, house full of books, majored in journalism, came to the United States at 21, wanted to write a novel. He hopped on a 15-speed Schwinn and rode it around the country, 12,000 miles, through 40 states, collecting stories all along the way. Colin McCann, who said he's had a happy life, so it doesn't make for an interesting story. He said, for me, the logical conclusion is that I have to write about outside my life. So he said, every time he writes a book, I take a brand new 3-year crash course in that which I want to know. To research one novel, he lived with homeless people in subway tunnels. For another, he went to Russia. For one, he looked at maps in the New York Public Library, then went off to Eastern Europe to wander through the gypsy camps. His epic, Let the Great World Spin, set in the 1970s, weaving the stories of a dozen New York protagonists, including prostitutes, a young radical Irish monk, a Park Avenue mother in mourning for her son, killed in Vietnam, a story that begins with the image of the tightrope walker high in the air, walking the wire between the World Trade Towers. To get the voice of his protagonist, Tilly, a 38-year-old grandmother, longtime prostitute, McCann did a lot of research. He tried talking with women on the street. He shadowed police detectives around the Bronx, looked through rap sheets, trying to figure out which crime she might have committed, read the memoir of a pimp. He was trying to get the tone of her voice. And then one night, a line came floating to him, which went, "The skinniest dog I ever seen is the one on the side of the Greyhound buses." And he recognized that as the voice that he was trying to channel. He wrote all night, he said, and wound up with 6 pages, a monologue by Tilly, in which she said, "They didn't let me go to Corrigan's funeral. I would have walked the bakery line to get there. They put me back in the pen instead. I weren't crying. I laid straight out on the bench with my hand over my eyes. I saw my rap sheet. It's yellow with 54 entries, typed up, not so neat. You see your life with carbon copies, kept in a file, Hunts Point, Lexington 49th, West Side Highway, all the way back to Cleveland." Colin McCann said, "I think a good novel can be a doorstep to despair. I also think the real bravery comes with those who prepare to go through that door and look at the world in all its grime and torment and still find something of value, no matter how small." Here's a poem for today by Emily Dickinson, "The Only News I Know." The only news I know is bulletins all day from immortality. The only shows I see tomorrow and today, perchance eternity. The only one I meet is God, the only street, existence, this traversed. If other news there be, or admirabler show, I'll tell it you. A poem by Emily Dickinson, "The Only News I Know." That's the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, offering poetry podcasts to listen to and thousands of poems to read at poetryfoundation.org. And by Lumosity. Lumosity.com's daily online workouts are designed to improve memory and attention and are dedicated to helping people feel sharper, think faster, and remember more. More at Lumosity.com. Produced by Joy Biles, assistance by Teresa Burgess. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Minutes before 4 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore, your host today for Juneau Afternoon, and my next guest, coming up in just a matter of seconds here, is going to be delivering the Fireside Lecture tonight, and the Fireside Lecture is on Mary Joyce, an extraordinary Alaskan woman. It's sort of an extraordinary woman day on Juneau Afternoon. We've had Elaine Schroeder, who is one of the women of distinction, and we have two women coming up to play at the University of Alaska next Tuesday. So right after this message, we'll talk to our next guest.
Support comes from Northern Audiology and Hearing Services, working with medical professionals to diagnose hearing disorders and prescribe solutions. Northland Audiology and Hearing Services. Information at 789-6780.
Hi, I'm Jenny DeGrappa, the reigning Miss Alaska Latina USA 2013. I'm also the survivor of a traumatic brain injury, which I suffered as a passenger in a car accident on January 1st, 2004. Early education is important in order to facilitate the best recovery possible. Brain injuries are a big problem in Alaska. Let's change that. If you hit your head, take it seriously. March is Brain Injury Awareness Month. To learn more, please visit alaskabraininjury.net.
Well, my next guest is going to be delivering 2 lectures tonight on Mary Joyce. And Mary Joyce, of course, is a former adventuress, I guess you'd have to call her, in Alaska. She came here in the 1960s, I think. Earlier than that, I guess. 1930s? 29,
actually.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, and there's a lodge involved in all of this and a tremendous number of wonderful adventures around the state. This was a woman who took the dogs by the reins and moved on with it at times. So you're going to my guest, by the way, is Mary Lou Gerby, and she's delivered a number of talks about Mary Joyce and worked in the lodge a bit, I think. Yeah. So welcome.
Well, thank you.
So, how did you develop this interest in Mary Joyce? Was that because you were working in the lodge and kind of looked around? Or?
No, the Empire, first of all, I was doing some stories on pioneers of Alaska, and Mary Joyce was one. Amy Lou Barney had told me, you've got to find out about Mary Joyce, and then other people. And I got a chance to go out. Ken Ward actually invited my husband and me to come out, land our little airplane, at that time a mall, on the ice, and then go snow machining with him and spend the night in the winter or the spring. And we did. And, just lots of things. I ended up being able to accept her award last spring as the 2013, as one of the Alaska women of distinction. In Anchorage, yes.
Mm-hmm. Mary Joyce came, well, she was a nurse.
She was a nurse.
And she was hired by someone to basically take care of their alcoholic son on a trip to Alaska.
The name is Hack, Lee Hackley Smith, and I think Hack gets a bad rap.
Okay.
But he did have an he was a hero in World War I in France. Like Hemingway, he'd... he'd been out there, an ambulance driver, had gotten injured, got shrapnel in his shoulder, and got a morphine addiction when he was in the hospital, and that later became an alcohol addiction. He was very wealthy. At the age of 9, he inherited then $3 million, which would be worth about $55 million.
Yeah, huge
today.
Yeah.
So he was interesting, but yeah. She came to take care of him, but I want you to know there were only 3 years difference between the two of them.
Hmm.
And so I see this as a love story as well.
Okay. So the plot becomes thicker and thicker here.
Yes.
So they came up in a yacht and came up the Inside Passage. And unfortunately, he died.
Yes.
And
at 38 years old.
Yeah.
Amazing, yeah.
But by this time now, Mary Joyce was the first woman radio operator in the state of Alaska. She was running the radios for Alaska, or Pacific Alaska Airways.
Right. It was a short-lived thing because she was out at the Taku Lodge. The mother, Hack's mother, after Hack died, gave her the lodge. Very, very close relationship between the three of them. And so Mary Joyce had lots of the Pacific Alaska Airways pilots staying at the lodge and were friends with Hack, went hunting with them and fishing and enjoyed the wilderness out there. They could get out there. You know, it's only it's 20 miles, 21 miles, I think. But it took 5 hours by boat when they first arrived.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, they had
not,
lots
not
of
counting
friends.
Time to repair the engine.
That's right. That's right. And get unstuck on the sandbars and avoid ice and you know,
right.
Icebergs in those days. Yeah. So different world.
So now she actually was chosen to be in a film.
She was actually a couple, a Tundra, but the main one and one that I'm actually going to have an excerpt of tonight is Orphans of the North, and it's a hoot. It's hokey. It's a 30s film made by a fellow named Norman Dawn. It's about Bedrock Brown, this prospector who loses a friend. There's a little girl, the friend's daughter is so worried about her daddy, she takes off and leaves camp and runs to see if she can find her dad. Bedrock is looking, this fellow is looking for dad. And it all converges as Mary Joyce comes and rescues the day. And
Bedrock dies and the little girl is rescued and daddy's already gone. And it sounds awful, but it's really kind of funny. They have polar bears and penguins at the Taku Lodge. Did you know that?
No. The penguins are exciting. This is something, this is an element of the Taku Lodge that I had never suspected. So this was followed then with a second film called The Flying Saucer.
Oh, my gosh. And that's based very, very loosely on Hack and Mary Joyce's life. Mm-hmm. I mean, very loosely. And I had the opportunity to see that. It's a 50s film, and maybe I should just put an exclamation after that and leave it alone.
I think we've got the image here.
Yeah, it's funny. It's fun, and a lot of Juno people got to have little starring roles.
So after, kind of concurrent with her career in films, she also came back to Juno as a nurse, sold a lodge, and ultimately wound up buying two saloons in town and running them successfully.
Right, and I'm not sure she would have ever left the lodge, but World War II, so many friends were really concerned about the Japanese invasion, because they had been out on Atkutu and Kiska and thought that Mary Joyce was vulnerable, and so she finally came into town and started working at St. Anne's as a nurse, right, and then eventually bought the two saloons, first the Top Hat and then the Lucky Lady. And I think most people remember her from those days when she was telling her stories in the bars I think a very personable woman. But there are lots of other fun stories about her. She's somewhat controversial.
She certainly had material to draw on, because this lady did a 1,000-mile dog sled trip.
Yes.
Almost on a bet. It was
It was the year after she stayed at the lodge the year after Hack died and stayed by herself. And they were planning a trip. She and Hack they used dogs to go get the mail and supplies on the Taku River in winter. And I think it was just a way to recover from that whole incident and start a new life. And so she did, she planned to go to Fairbanks for the winter carnival. This would have been 1936. But she decided to go via the way that the Pacific Alaska Airways pilots were flying. The new passenger run from Juneau to Fairbanks went via the Taku Lodge. Mm-hmm. And so she went that way, and there were no trails this was uncharted territory. Part of the time she used native guides, part of the time she went alone. And it's just an amazing adventure. She took too much stuff. She's a woman.
The piano was probably a little bit of an overreach.
Yeah, yeah.
So I you've answered my question that I started this with initially, which was, how did you come to be interested in Mary Joyce? Who would not? All you have to do is find out she existed, and all of a sudden you're fascinated.
Right. Yeah. She's the quintessential Alaska woman, I think.
You bet.
Able to do the guy things as well as the girl things.
And do it all with a certain
pizzazz.
And so you're going to do now two presentations tonight, but they're the same.
They are.
6:30 and 8 p.m. These are both out at the Visitor Center at the Glacier.
Right.
There's plenty of parking out there. It's really very nice. Those who don't know about it, if you walk down the trail and kind of look back behind you after you pass the stairs, there's an elevator up.
Right.
And so you don't have to walk up all that bunch of stairs, and it's a little bit slippery out there right now, so
right.
That might be something to think about. But anyway, these are at 6:30 and 8 p.m., two back-to-back presentations. These wonderful presentations, both of them with excerpts from film, probably some pictures.
Mm-hmm.
An expert who has studied her subject well, Mary Lou Gerby, is going to be doing these presentations tonight at the Glacier Visitor Center out on the Back Loop Road. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, and don't forget there are Oreos out there.
Oh, yes, Oreos and tea and coffee. So,
that's right.
Unless, as happened one of the nights when I went, the power fails and the coffee doesn't get made.
Oh, dear.
Anyway, that was the exciting moment in our history. Folks,
thank you.
Thank you so much for coming down. Folks, Bamua is coming. They got Ketchikan out back when we had the fog. Remember the fog? A little bit ago, well, they got it. They made it to Ketchikan, but they couldn't get up here. Well, they're going to be here March 1st at 7:30. They're playing at the Juno at the Jack in the main hall, and so we'll do a little music so you can get an idea what this is. These folks do a cappella. They start out with usually a chant that's based on Northern Eskimo and some Greenlandic languages, but then they play jazz, and so it's an amazing thing. Take a listen.
At the KTOO at 360 Performance Space for the next Writer's Showcase. Creative short stories and personal essays by Alaska writers will be read aloud by Perseverance actors before a studio audience. The show will be recorded for later broadcast on 360 North TV and KTOO FM. Again, come join us on March 6th for the Writer's Showcase at KTOO. More information at 360north.org.
12 minutes before 3 o'clock. Pat Moore, your host today for Juno Afternoon. You're in tune with KTOO News. My next guest is here to tell us about a town hall meeting. Lauren Tibbett-Travis is with me. And this is a town hall meeting of what started out as LGBT and now has added QIA+ to the total abbreviation for this organization. Community members and allies invited to discuss Juno's lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, I guess it is. Queer, what's the
Some
I?
People identify as intersex, and then we also have to acknowledge our straight allies.
And then asexuals and allies. So there's some debate as to what that is, but the allies are folks who are somewhat sympathetic to this. So you're going to be talking about a number of major issues that are coming up for the various communities that are represented by the LGBTIAQ+ group.
Yeah, what we're doing, we sent out a survey in early February, kind of thinking about what kind of things do we really want to talk about? There have been suggestions for, well, let's talk about legislative things. Okay, well, what specifically? Let's talk about events. Okay, but what specifically? We're trying to narrow down these really big ideas into, like, actual talking points. And so some of the four main talking points came out of supporting our queer youth in our high schools and our university and, you know, just in the community, how to take legislative action, how to make a smart noise up at the Capitol, and then event planning, specifically Pride Month, which is in June, and then how to be awesome at the 4th of July parade.
Mm-hmm.
Networking with other organizations in town and kind of trying to build a strong base of people who are willing to be excited and energized and give that energy to these organizations in town is also something that we're looking to talk about, because it's the worst thing in the world is having all these great organizations that can do all these great things and then just not enough manpower to go around.
The town hall meeting is scheduled for March 1st, Saturday, at 3 in the afternoon, and it's in the Valley Library Conference Room, which is the room that's kind of in the back of the Valley Mendenhall Library in the mall.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
There was a town hall previously last September, and I believe that was held at the Unitarian Church down in Douglas, but I could be wrong. And so we're just doing some follow-up. Just trying to stay connected as a community.
And the Unitarian Universalists have momentarily been, they're unhoused by the fact that the boiler system in the temple that they normally meet in has failed. And so
yeah.
I think at the moment they're meeting out at one of the junior high school libraries. So that, as a matter of fact, they were on the show last week because they had done this really interesting service and scheduled it for last Sunday. Which had to do with the Church of St. John Coltrane in San Francisco, and they had a jazz group that played a bunch of Coltrane music at their service on Sunday morning. So it was quite an interesting event that they had discovered that there are actually people who recognized Coltrane as a seeker, and so it was an interesting, really interesting program.
I had not heard that. That sounds fascinating.
Yeah, I was quite fascinated myself. So there is just at the moment a bill to, there's a discussion going on, I guess. I don't know if legislation has actually been placed that would legalize same-sex marriage in the state of Alaska.
As far as I know, what it is it's the Senate Resolution 30 offered by Senator French. And what he's looking at is to make a constitutional amendment and put it to the voters whether or not to overturn our current ban on same-sex marriage, which is a little different, so I want to make that distinction. But hopefully, there have been more Alaskans who are in favor of equal marriage, no matter what you call it, in the state than ever before, really, I believe. The numbers seem to be between 47 and 49 for, and then 45 and 46 opposed, with about 7% on not answering or just unsure. And I'm really excited. I'm not sure if it'll pass, but I'm so super excited, and I really want to thank Senator French for putting it out there. We've also got Senate Bill 131, which is the Senate proposal to amend the Non-Discrimination Act to include sexual orientation, gender expression, and gender identity as to protected classes and part of the powers to the Human Rights Commission. And its House partner, I guess, legislation, House Bill 139, would accomplish the same. Mm. I'm really excited about this. House Bill 139 was sponsored by Representative Kurtula last season, and I believe it stalled in state affairs. But we just had a really great hearing on Senate Bill 131 over in, over on the Capitol, and it was great. We had, I think, 20 people that voiced their support, and it was really great. We had members of the LGBT plus community. We had straight allies. We had Mildred Besser, who's a you know, a really nice lady and a clergy wife, and straight. And I just, I love her. She was a great friend to me in high school. And it's really nice. I really enjoy seeing Juno come together in these things. We've got a really vibrant community, and I'm really excited about the things that we can do.
Lauren, you speak with a degree of involvement that makes me wonder, how did you come to the point where you're actually leading testimonial groups in front of the legislature and things like that?
My parents raised me to be very outspoken, very opinionated, much to the chagrin of others. My grandfather was, I wouldn't say quite instrumental, but he was a really great person, key motivator in the flourishing of the LGBT community in Anchorage, like in the 70s and 80s. And so I get some of my passion from him. I also have a number of LGBT members in my family, in my extended family. And I just, I don't know, maybe it's just how I was raised, but I really do believe in human rights, and I just, yeah, went from there.
So you're here kind of as a spokesman for a town hall meeting. Give me an idea of what your ideal outcome would be of what's going to happen tomorrow afternoon.
Okay. Basically, how I envision it happening is people come in, grab some food. We start introducing ourselves and saying why we have a vested interest in the LGBT community and specifically why we want things to be better or what we constitute as better. Discussing legislative actions, how to be our own lobbyists. The LGBT community in Alaska does not currently have a lobbyist to ourselves. So I want to be talking about how to do that, how to be our own activists. Also, how do we support our youth? Growing up in Juneau, I came out at 16 publicly to my parents and then over the radio at 18. It was a little hard growing up queer in Alaska, and it's not something unique to me. So, you know, just going through these discussion points, talking about what we see happening, what do we want from the community, and what do we want for the community? And I really hope that that becomes something that we can work from. Specifically, what kind of events do we want to host, either in June, July, just period? And then who would be willing to help lead the charge in doing so? Just kind of identifying who has the energy or the time or just the desire to get some things done.
Outstanding. So the town hall meeting is beginning at 3 p.m. on March 1st, tomorrow afternoon at the Valley Library Conference Room. Refreshments will be provided.
Yep.
Lauren Tibbett-Travis is the person we've been talking to here. You can reach her at letibbetttravis@gmail.com. Can I give your phone number?
Yes, you may.
It's 907-957-7937, 957-7937 if you want more information, or just come in the door at the library and join the group back in the conference room.
Yep.
I hope you have a big crowd.
Thank you.
And I hope some of these goals that you've kind of articulated for us are something that comes out of the meetings.
Thank you so much.
Folks, Ruth Moody is coming to town. She's the one of the founders of the Waylon Jennies, and she's doing her own concert at Thunder Mountain High School on March 7th. So we'll go out with a little of her music. Please. Ruth Moody, she'll be in concert at Thunder Mountain High School on March 7th, so take it in. Got a lot of events coming up this weekend. Tuesday night next week is the Nashville artists Jessica Campbell and Sarah Beth Go up on campus. Elaine Schroeder's speech will be at the Women of Distinction, and tonight the program on Mary Joyce out at the Visitors Center. This is KTOO Juno. We broadcast on translators K276 AF in the Mendenhall Valley in Auk Bay, K269 AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K201 AM in Gustavus, K220 BT in Hoonah, and K210 AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juno, KTOO is on GCI Cable on digital channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org. Support for national programming on KTOO comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and thank you very much from listeners like you. Tell it to me.